In our parliament, Mr. Speaker rules everything. So
15 minutes.
To him very carefully. And I have to say, in our parliament, when there's so many people here, it is extremely rare that the audience is so polite. Good morning. Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be here. And my comments follow on very much from Monsieur Barr, because he set out some of the challenges. I'm now setting out how in the UK we address some of the practical problems of dealing with a parliament where only a minority have any science, technology, engineering or mathematics background. In our case, it's about 10% of the House. And this is a problem that one sees throughout most of the Western world, not exclusively. It's less of a problem in the East. And in some of the emergent African countries, there is a stronger presentation. But there's a serious problem for all of us. I'm not saying this is a blueprint that everyone should follow. I'm saying this is how we've tried to address the problem in the UK. Most of our members of Parliament, of course, have backgrounds in law and in economics, and some of them think that science is far too difficult, but I must say I get very confused with economic theory, and I think most economists seem to give me the laws of physics any time. All members of Parliament need to represent their constituents and hold the government to account, and inevitably, some of the time, that will involve understanding the science behind an issue. I thought it'd be of interest to you to know how science and technology information is disseminated throughout the House and what resources are available to us. Parliament as a whole has two select committees like mine, one in the House of Commons, one in the House of Lords. There's also a second body called the Parliamentary and Scientific Committee. This is a voluntary group. It's not a formal part of the House, but it's the oldest of what we call all-party groups. This brings together science, academia, industry, and Parliament as equals, and it is entirely on a cross-party basis involving the Commons and the Lords. And we also have a body called the Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology, which started off with a small group of people going to see Margaret Thatcher. This dates the story. And it was a cross-party delegation saying to Margaret Thatcher when she was Prime Minister, more needs to be done to improve Parliament's understanding of science. And initially, POST, the Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology, started as a charitable body funded through the Wellcome Trust and the Gatsby Trust that helped inform Parliament. And in the early 90s, that was brought inside the House. And is now managed by a board of which I'm a member, and it works in parallel with the library. Making sense of all of our complex structures is also backed up by some very specialist people in our libraries. Our system is split in two. This, of course, is the Senate, as was in the old days in Hungary, and we still have a bicameral system. And as I said, the committees sit in both houses. Many of you will know John Krebs. He's my opposite number in the House of Lords chairing the committee. And the Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology sits across between the two of us. These are member-driven bodies. The Parliamentary and Scientific Committee. The Parliamentary Office of Science and Technology and the two libraries are driven by the staff, but of course are member influenced. So we'll take you through them. Post does things like this, produce a briefing note written in very straightforward terms to help people understand the complexities, in this case, of cybersecurity. But whatever subject may be being discussed, we would expect Post to be able to produce a briefing note that's written in intelligible bytes for lay people in a fairly short period of time. And the board will periodically sit down and meet and work out how they do their job. Then the Parliamentary and Scientific Committee, very big organisation. It was created in 1939 in bad times and has been there ever since, bringing together the academic community, the industrial community and Parliament. It publishes this magazine called Science in Parliament. Science in Parliament is online. Members of the body, which includes, for example, Oxford University, will be a single member, and so all of the Oxford students have access to all current editions of the online magazine. And but everything that's more than a year old is available freely on the web. And this is aimed at keeping members up to date on some complex issues as they come before the House. We're just looking at planning the next editions for the forthcoming parliamentary year, and we're planning the programmes of meetings that will occur under the Parliamentary and Scientific Committee, and also the contents of future magazines. Anyone that wants to offer some contributions are most welcome. The editorial board will consider them. And of course, this is an editorial board of scientists. We don't seek to have any political bias in this field. Then the library will produce notes on more policy-related aspects. In this case, there's a bill called the Daylight Saving Bill going through. This does cause confusion because there are some people in the country who seem to take the view that if we go on to European time, we'll gain an hour extra daylight. Sometimes you have to explain to people it doesn't quite work like that. But the library, it's true. I get letters like this, I tell you, as from constituents. The library produced more broadly based communication. One innovation that has taken place over the last 10 years ago, we created a partnership with the Royal Society, through which members of Parliament are paired with a fellow of the Royal Society, a new, young, dynamic researcher working in at the leading edge. And we spend a little time showing them how Parliament works and the other way round. So last year, I was privileged to be working with a fellow who is based at Liverpool University and is an oceanographer. And he spent about a week in Parliament understanding how Parliament works. And I've been out the Irish Sea with him, playing with his toys and having great fun, but not just enjoying myself, but seriously catching up with things that inevitably slip behind. Because even if members of Parliament start with any STEM background, it inevitably will get out of date. So you've got to find ways of keeping people up to date with things. I was billed as the chairman of the Science Select Committee. The Select Committee structure covers a whole range of disciplines, mostly shadowing government departments. In my case, because science occurs, hopefully, in every department, we have a broadly ranging remit which enables us to cross every government department. And here, just an example, we published a piece of work on strategically important metals that got a lot of media coverage last year. I deliberately insisted that we'd have the periodic table on the front cover, not to make it look a bit more glamorous, but actually seriously as an educational tool for those members of Parliament who haven't seen a periodic table since they were in their sixth form or whatever. The work we're doing at the moment ranges from looking at malware, we're looking at the science budget, we're currently doing some work on the meteorology office, which has been intriguing. I was talking to one delegate about that earlier on this week. We need an informed voice, and so our task is to help inform Parliament, and periodically there'll be opportunities to hold debates on subjects that occur. There's the members of the committee, a cross-section of people, some with science backgrounds, some older members, some newer members, they, as you can see, the colours indicate the political party. The government of the day, at the moment an alliance between the Conservatives and the Liberals, will always have a majority. But I'm elected by the whole of the House to my post. And so this is one thing that I would say to people, that particularly in the developing democracies, making things work on a cross-party basis in the interests of science and engineering is a hugely important step, and it's something I would commend to all, because this committee has never created a divided report. We've always worked in a consensual way, because select committee reports are respected if they are published on a cross-party basis with a unanimous sign-up to them. Very briefly, the Select Committee can, of course, from time to time, make the government's life difficult, inevitably, because we'll publish something that is controversial. We have access to an enormous source of information. We have the capacity to hire in experts when we need them. We have a team of brilliant young specialists who've got a superb network in the science community in the UK and beyond. We have a clear duty, according to the Constitution, to raise issues in the House, contribute to debates where possible, and ask informed questions. Obviously, at the present time, the big issues have been around the budget and changes that have occurred. We've recently published an important piece of work on the government's proposed closure of part of our forensic science service. And that has meant that we've had to delve into a very complex area of science, but at the same time look at the policy of the Home Office and the Justice Department as well. So our reports, like that one, have had an impact upon the way we've been able to persuade government to shift its position. And the Forensic Science Service was a good example. They started off with an adamant view that the service was going to close. We persuaded them that in the interests of cold case reviews, the archive of the Forensic Science Service will be protected as a national archive, and therefore helping future applications of science in that very difficult areas. As you can see, we have an enormous resource available to us. We're still working on that problem of and that challenge of engaging more and more members of Parliament on scientific and engineering issues, but this is a practical description of how one country has tried to solve some of these challenges, and I hope it gives everyone an insight into the way one Parliament actually does its job. We engage the governments, we follow the money, we try and establish good working relationships. Our real task is to look after the science base in the country in the interests of the nation state. You can get some of the pieces of information online. A lot of what I've said is online at these addresses. And thank you very much. It's a great privilege to be here in this hall.